Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the Nova Scotia SPCA podcast. My name's Marnie Tuttle, and I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at the Nova Scotia SPCA, and I get to be your host today. I'm truly delighted to welcome Francis Cheslow, a registered veterinary technician who is the Shelter Engagement Manager for Hills Pet Nutrition Canada. On today's podcast, we're going to chat about the Canada State of Shelter Pet Adoption Report and what it tells us about adoptions, fosters, and animals in shelters. Welcome, Francis, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Francis, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a registered veterinary technician, and I've been with Hills, this September has been 33 years. So probably, you know, a lot longer than some people have been around, which just shows, you know, what it's like to work for this company. I am proud pet parent of two Cornish Rex cats because my husband is allergic to cats. I'm a standard poodle fan, and I love what I do.
That's amazing. So we're going to find out a little bit more about you with a traditional game that we play on the podcast. It's called A Game of Fetch, and I'm going to ask you some quick questions, and you get a chance to tell us your immediate reaction. So who was your first pet?
Harpo. Harpo was from the, I'm from Montreal. Harpo was my first dog from the Montreal SPCA. She was an incredible dog. I think she was a border collie cross. She was orange and white and just had that same features of a border collie. And she was just an incredible dog. So she was my first dog, first pet.
Amazing. And if animals could talk, who would be the nicest?
Ooh, good question. I know it sounds strange, but I think of a sloth. Why? Because sloths, whenever you look at them, I know they're slow and they're calm, but they always look like they have a smile. So I don't know. I don't know why sloth just, I kept thinking of a smile. So yes.
I love that. So if animals could talk, who would be the rudest?
Donkeys. You know, you see videos of donkeys and people call them and they're just screaming at you. Why weren't you with me? How come you left me alone? And they just look like they're happy but rude.
And Francis, who is your hero?
Oh. Okay, this might be tacky, but I'm going to have to say my father. My father lived a life of hardship, but he ended up not turning his life around, but he started his life through a lot of hardship and ended up being a kind, caring, warm, compassionate person that everybody loved.
I love that. And I know a little bit about his daughter, and I think she follows those same exact values. So,
thank you.
So I'd like to open up with a couple of questions, but I think the first one is actually about Hills and why Hills chooses to work with shelters across Canada and support changes in ways that support changes for lives of animals.
Well, I think the best way to explain it is Hills' mission statement is to help enrich and lengthen the special relationship between people and their pets. And the Hills Food, Shelter, and Love program is a true extension of that mission, because if an animal is in a shelter, that relationship with that human isn't quite as good as if they were in a home or owned by someone or cared for someone or a guardian of someone. I think that's really why we do this.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that program provides for shelters across Canada?
Absolutely. So our program is an opportunity to help shelters allow animals to eat, you know, science-led nutrition from Hills, and hopefully result in them being happy, healthy, and easily adoptable and quickly adoptable. Because we know good nutrition really makes a difference.
That's fantastic. Besides the direct support that Hills provides for shelter, every year your company invests in the State of Shelter Pet Adoption Report, and for the last number of years, a Canada-specific piece of that, I understand. So why does Hills collect the data, and what change are they trying to make for families, pets, and shelters?
Well, actually, this year is an inaugural one for Canada. It's the first time we've done this in Canada. In our US counterparts have done it for the past few years, and we were excited to do the same research in Canada. And the goal is to understand what's driving pet owner prospective adopter behavior. So we surveyed a nationally representative group of about 500 current and prospective Canadian pet parents, pet owners. The insights were brought together to form the inaugural 2025 Canada State of Pet Adoption Report.
It's a really interesting report. We've read through it a few times here at the SPCA, and it's actually part of our planning, used as part of our planning for our strategic plan. Excellent. And we've shared it with a number of other partners. So I know a little bit about what we gleaned from that report, but could you share with us a little about specifically what you learned about fostering in Canada that you published in the report?
Absolutely. So fostering was very enlightening to see. One of the things, although fostering is viewed positively, limited awareness of programs and concerns about foster failing, time, space, and cost may limit broader participation. Of those that were surveyed, 59% felt positive about fostering, but only 8% have actually fostered, which is actually kind of shocking. And, you know, there is a positive understanding about fostering, but I think the myth is that they can't afford to foster. And I think that's what needs to change.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the things that we picked up on was, you know, it was 40% of people didn't even recognize that fostering was an option. And then of those that were positively inclined, it was such a few number that actually pick up. And there were definitely some barriers that were identified in the report, and cost was one of them. But were there some other ways that you think shelters can reduce the barriers and help people to provide pets with a foster home that came out through that process?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's the awareness of what's included. So understanding that pretty much all they need to do is show their love, a warm place to sleep, and everything else is provided by the shelters. And I think that awareness, the vet care, the food, the toys, the bedding, the love is the only thing that they really need to do. And the ability, should they need to bring the animal back to the shelter for any additional medical care, should that be needed. But that's all covered. And I think that's really what is highlighted as missing. And it's also a great entry point for pet parents to potentially foster to adopt. So if they're not sure if the animal's right for them, if they're not sure if bringing an animal to the home period is right for them, fostering to adopt is a great way to go. And I think also the awareness of realizing that animals that go into foster are there because they're not doing too well in the shelter. It also makes room for more animals to come into the shelter while animals in foster, and they might not be with them for very long. So I think there's a lot of misinformation or lack of information out there. And I think once that improves, I think shelters will be in a better position to actually increase their foster base.
I think that was one of the things our team took away was the, we view fosters as such a precious resource that foster to adopt was something that we actually discourage. But when we think about it in terms of making it accessible to more families, it's almost like we need introductory fosters, and it's okay if some of them end up in foster to adopt situations. Because the other thing that showed up in the report was that someone who adopts from a shelter was more likely to adopt from a shelter again in the future. So it's a different pathway, but a huge opportunity for shelters and an excellent opportunity for families to have an experience with an animal that maybe when you read the bio and it says, you know, needs ear meds every week. And that's a little intimidating to families who don't have the skills that are available in a family like yours. You know, a live-in RVT would be nice in every household, but not everybody has that. And to know that you could take an animal home, learn how to do that, and see if that's something that works out well. I think the other takeaway that we saw was amongst our team was that we have a tendency to not have animals go into foster unless they're very medically well. And there's a sense that we can provide better medical care in the shelter. And that may or may not be true, but we can't provide a family setting in the shelter. And often the behaviors that we want to see, the behaviors that we want to foster in animals are better, show up in a family setting. And every family that has a pet at some point provides some level of medical care, you know, Absolutely. Whether it's, whether it's, you know, the cat that has the allergy or the dog that, you know, maybe needs a little treatment after a tick exposure. Every family has that. And so the ability to educate families about what might be a temporary issue, you know, maybe they're providing a cream for a few weeks while that animal stabilizes and something gets better. Or maybe it's a long-term situation where they're on a medication for life. But those are things we can teach owners and we can teach fosters.
Exactly. And that awareness of you're not alone, I think, is a factor not only from a foster perspective, but from an adoption perspective. Realizing that once the animal's in your care, doesn't mean you guys walk away. You know, animal shelters are there to ensure that there's support for, you know, if there's feeding issues, if there's behavioral issues, if there's medical issues, you guys can either provide the resources or provide the support for them once they're in their loving homes. So I think that's really eye-opening as well, is that some people are reluctant to adopt for those reasons, because they're worried that they're not going to get that support once they are home.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that anybody who's fostering for the Nova Scotia SPCA, you know, you're coming in, you're picking up an animal that you've chosen. It's a setup where you put yourself on a list and then you get sent some options when animals come in that are appropriate for foster. You go home with the animal, you go home with the medications they need, the food, if there's litter. You're walking out the door well-equipped with everything that you need and well-educated with what you need to get through the next couple of days or couple of weeks that animal is going to be home with you. Often there's a trip back in to visit a veterinarian for a little checkup, and then it's an opportunity to adopt. And whether that's the animal for your family or that you're someone who feels like this is something they want to do to give back to the community and that animal's coming back in for an adoption, it works out well for the animal in every situation and has just been, I think fosters are a tremendous resource and we would love to see more of them, not just in Nova Scotia, but I think across Canada.
Absolutely. And I think you hit it on the nail with all the details that you just shared. I think that awareness about what you guys do to support those fosters and support the animals that they open up their homes to, I think that's tremendous. And I think that message needs to get out there so that hopefully that 8% grows significantly to many more opening up their doors to try. I know my niece and nephew have a dog. They actually fostered this summer. And they love that experience. He now is in his Elliot Moose was his name, is his name. They kept it. And, they just brought in yesterday. We saw them and now they have for 48 hours, they have this 8-week-old puppy that they need to just keep an eye on for 48 hours while, they move from one home to the next. So I think it's fabulous. I think that opportunity, once you do it once, you do it. I have to admit, I have a family who is concerned about the foster fail piece. And I've tried to convince certain family members that, you know, it's not a good thing to foster fail, but if it happens, it happens. but it's a great opportunity to help those animals that need it, that don't do well in the shelter environment, that just need that loving home to decompress, to enjoy, to relax, to feel some, you know, one-on-one love, and hopefully get them in their forever loving homes.
And it's interesting how, you know, those of us who are in the shelter world talk about foster fail. And what is a foster fail for us is just the loss of a family that was comfortable taking in an animal. It's never a loss for the animal when it's a foster fail.
100%.
So it's always that positive outcome.
Yeah.
The other program we have here at the Nova Scotia SPCA is the Pause and Support Program, where we provide temporary housing for families that are fleeing or leaving situations of intimate partner violence. And that's something my family's done a couple of times. And for I have four kids of varying ages, and foster fail is definitely a fear. The kids do become really connected to the animals who've come into our home, but they know that that animal is going back to a loving home. They know it's going to a family that has deeply missed them, and that we are a temporary spot that makes everything a little bit better, not just for, in our case, it's been a couple of cats, but not just for the cats, but also for the families. And I well, there's tears usually when the cats leave. I think it's a positive all the way around for our family, for the family that we're helping, and for the pet in need. So
that's lovely.
I hope other people will try it.
Yeah. So, I think that's an excellent program. It's the same idea, right? It's the same idea as fostering. It's just that one is definitely a fixed time. And you know, you can't, if you're worried about foster failing, that's a great opportunity.
So, Frances, as our time draws to a close, I think it's important that we celebrate that Hills and the Nova Scotia SPCA have come to a really interesting milestone, or are coming to a really interesting milestone in November. So how long have Hills and the Nova Scotia SPCA been working together?
10 years. We've been together in partnership for 10 years, and as I always say, where does time fly? It's hard to believe. Personally, I've seen so many fabulous changes with the Nova Scotia SPCA from when we first partnered with you to where you guys are today. It's incredible what your team has done, what the people in your community are willing to support, how we've been able to support you, not just through the Hills Food Shelter and Love program, but through disaster relief. And you know, sometimes being able to support on occasion your pet food pantry, it's just, we value our partnerships. I value our partnership. And ultimately the animals in your care are the best recipients of it all.
It's been a really incredible partnership. I think one that started here in Dartmouth, but now actually supports all of our shelters across the province from Yarmouth to Sydney. And Frances is probably been to more than half of our shelters, traveling around the province to make sure that the animals have what they need, that our setup is appropriate, and that we're a great partner for Hills as well. And it's been, you know, Nova Scotia had a rough couple of years when it came to climate disasters, and to know that we could pick up the phone and call Hills and that they would be there to help has been a tremendous asset as we worked through those situations. So, Frances, just before we close, is there anything else that you want to share with us?
No, I think, you know, it's an honor partnering with you. It's an honor being part of this podcast. I was very excited to do this. I think the shelter report really is something exciting for us in Canada, because I don't think there is anything like it before. And it really just shows our commitment to animal welfare. Which includes a rich history of work and programming. I mean, believe it or not, the Hills Food Shelter and Love program has been around for 23 years and has helped support more than 15 million adoptions and provided over $300 million in pet nutrition to feed shelter pets and more than in more than 1,000 shelters. I'm sorry, not 100,000, in more than 1,000 shelters across North America. And we're really proud of that. And I think this report really gives an opportunity, like you highlighted, we hope, for our shelter partners, for the veterinary community, animal advocates, to really look and understand what the opportunities are and what the gaps are to make improvements to animal welfare.
And the report is such a huge asset for those of us who are doing planning for animal sheltering across Canada. You know, we work in a space that has very little cross-Canada data. You know, each shelter reports their own numbers that Humane Canada does collect and share some information. But your information is coming from the public as opposed to the shelters. It's across the country. It focused in on fostering and adoption, a piece about the cost of care and the barriers for both adoption and fostering. And I think it's just an incredibly valuable resource for organizations that want to make a difference for animals in Canada. So thank you so much to Hills for the work that you've done on this report, for the great partner that you've been for the Nova Scotia SPCA. And thank you, Francis, for joining us today. It's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. Before I go, though, I also need to thank our listeners for being here. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already to be notified when a new episode comes out. Give us 5 stars, share this episode and podcast so that other animal lovers can find us. Until next time, thank you.